Mythology's Icarus is no match for NASA's Parker Solar Probe, its mission to touch the sun. And last week, it broke the record and flew closer to our star than any man-made object has before. And if that's not impressive enough, it's also now moved faster than any human-made object ever has. Now, there is a Michigan tie to this important moment in space exploration, and he joined us last Thursday at our live show at Zingerman's Gray Line in Ann Arbor. Justin Casper is principal investigator for the Parker Solar Probe and a climate space scientist professor at the University of Michigan, and here is our conversation from last week. So what is the mission of this probe?
Solar probe's pretty amazing. For more than 50 years, we've had this list of dream missions to try and do, and Parker Solar Probe, it's called now, has always been on that list. We want to send a spacecraft into the sun's atmosphere for the first time. We just haven't had the technology to be able to do that before. Before I get into why we were able to do it, finally, why on earth would you want to do that other than, you know, that sounds fun, Icarus and all that, and we'll show him wrong. Well, there are two big mysteries. If you look at the sun, its surface is yellow. It's glowing at around 6,000 degrees the same way like your toaster wires glow when they're hot. And much to our surprise, when you look at the solar atmosphere above that surface, instead of cooling off, the temperature rises. Within about 100 kilometers, the temperature jumps up to 100,000 degrees. The sun is surrounded by an extended atmosphere we call the corona that's heated to 1 to 10 million degrees. So we'd really like to understand what on earth is going on that superheats the sun's atmosphere.
Technology-wise, I mean, you're sending this thing off. How do you know it isn't going to just evaporate? What's the technology that let this happen?
So first, we do a lot of testing on the ground. We had to take advantage of a lot of very new materials. So the front of the spacecraft is a 10-square-meter heat shield made of a carbon foam that can survive, you know, 3,000 degrees without anything happening. The front of it's covered in kind of synthetic sapphire crystal, very reflective, very strong. And it needs to be because the closest approach, we're reflecting something like 6 megawatts of sunlight, so enough energy to power a village. The light's so bright it would flip the spacecraft around in under a minute if we didn't actively push back against it. So we needed these new materials to survive. We tested on the ground. Right now the situation is where we're plunging towards the sun and it's running autonomously. So it'll be a couple weeks before I know for sure that it made it out the other side intact.
Wow. So and just to get us a sense, how close to the sun will the probe get throughout the course of this multi-year mission?
Sure. So Earth is about 215 solar radii away from the sun. Right now, we're about 40 solar radii away from the sun, and in a few days, we'll have our closest approach at 35 solar radii, and then we'll come whipping back out again. Over the next 7 years, we have 7 encounters with Venus, and each time we go by Venus, we play a little game. We slow down and we speed Venus up a little bit, and that changes our orbit so we can plunge closer and closer to the sun. So by the end of the mission, we'll be closing the less than 10 solar radii away from the sun. It's practically 4% of the way from the Earth.
Amazing. Yeah. And the Parker Solar Probe has now traveled faster than, let me see if I have the figures right, 153,454 miles per hour. So the fastest ever man-made object relative to the sun. How is it moving so fast?
So the first big challenge is just getting something away from Earth and then basically slowing it down enough so it can fall towards the sun. So we had to slow down and lose as much as of Earth's speed around the sun as possible. That then let us fall towards the sun, and now it's just gravity. So it's really stunning. If you go online and look at the trajectory, you'll see it's accelerating. It actually, while we were recording, it crossed 160,000 miles an hour. And at fastest approach, in 7 years, it'll be moving at around 430,000 miles an hour. So New York to Philadelphia in like 1 second.
Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be great, right? Stopping would be difficult.
Stopping might be hard. So since launch was August?
Launch was August 12th.
All right. So how has it performed? And are you going to be able to dive into all the data?
It's been fantastic. I thought when it launched, I would finally relax, but that was not the case. Basically, we took off and within a couple days, we're talking to the instruments, checking them out, powering up high voltages. And what happens is about 6 days before the encounter, the spacecraft retracts its communication dish behind the heat shield so it doesn't melt. So our instruments have to autonomously decide what to do. So we basically had 3 months to decide, okay, is everything working? Great. let's set it up for what we think the sun will be like and make sure it's trying to capture the right observations. Just on Halloween at around 10 in the morning, basically a switch flipped on the spacecraft and we went into this encounter science mode. I hope. Basically, all we're getting right now is a beep coming from the spacecraft. We know it's alive and it's still working. If something goes wrong, it'll beep differently. But otherwise, we have to wait about 11 days to find out what happened.
And on tenterhooks.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Justin, I'm interested in what humankind, how will we benefit from the data that Parker Solar Probe is going to collect and send back?
So I like to think about it in terms of the basic science and then the societal applications. So from the basic science point of view, like, I'm mystified that something can heat material up to millions of degrees. I mean, I sure can't do that. And we think it has something to do with magnetic fields and waves near the sun. If we could understand why the sun's atmosphere has such an easy time doing that, you know, maybe we could figure out how to do controlled fusion, you know, the ultimate clean energy source, just to pick a really cool example of how we might apply that. In terms of practical benefit to society, you know, every now and then the solar atmosphere will throw off a massive eruption. We call these coronal mass ejections. The equivalent of all the water of Lake Michigan going from rest to moving at 3 million miles an hour in just tens of minutes. And sometimes Earth gets in the way of one of those eruptions. We had a really famous one in the 1850s. It swept over Earth, and when it crossed over, it knocked out telegraph lines for 3 days. Arcs were just sparking off of telegraph poles. Compasses were just wiggling around. The aurora was seen all the way down to the Caribbean. Now, you might ask, what would happen today? Well, we don't use the telegraph, but there have been studies by FEMA and other agencies that suggest that we could lose every transformer on the east and west coast and not have electrical power for a few years.
Whoa.
And that's just not survivable. Yeah, so what we're trying to do is figure out how to build a predictive model, the same way we're getting better at saying this hurricane might make landfall, maybe in this area. If we could say this eruption is heading towards us, we should probably power down the electrical grid. You know, we could avoid a real disaster.
Now, you mentioned 7 years.
Yep.
Is that the lifespan? I mean, what is it that's going to end this mission?
So if all goes well, we should be fine at the end of 7 years. The spacecraft controls it's solar-powered, amazingly. So that actually took a lot of work. The original idea is it was going to be nuclear-powered. But what we do is we pump water through the back of the solar panels, and we just extend the edges of the solar panels out to collect sunlight at closest approach. When we're further from the sun, we extend the solar panels out more. That provides more electricity. And then actually it warms the water so it doesn't freeze. So it's a very delicate interplay. So we won't run out of power. We need fuel to push back against just the pressure of the light as we approach the sun. And so if everything goes fine, in the end, one day what will happen is, as we approach the sun each time, we spin up a big wheel to counteract the pressure of the light. And then we fire a rocket every now and then so we can slow the wheel down again. If we run out of fuel, and we have a lot of fuel, so that's good, but one day if we run out of fuel, we won't be able to slow down that wheel. The spacecraft will flip around, and it would take less than a second to incinerate the normal part of the spacecraft. It couldn't handle those temperatures.
And that will be... Oh, yeah, I was
going to say. But that could be tens of years from now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
Knock on wood.
Why did you become a space scientist? What drew you to space?
Oh, wow. Well, for me personally, every generation has their stories. I mean, the Sputnik generation, that's a wonderful story. For me, it was unfortunately watching Challenger. Mm-hmm. So I was one of those fourth graders who was in a cafeteria watching live. And it was, you know, very disturbing, right? But I became fascinated in this thought of using robots to supplement human exploration. I love the space shuttle, I love human exploration, but I just got really into this thought of like, well, maybe for these really extreme environments, we can send a robot first. And, you know, for some reason, I never came up with anything better to do. So here I find myself today.
And so how does what you're doing, here you are, the chance to be lead investigator with the Parker Solar Probe, how does that compare with the dreams you had when you were that fourth grader watching and starting to think of space?
It's like kind of the same. I mean, it's amazing. I have a four-year-old now, and I watch what he says. Sorry, a three-year-old. I watch what he says he wants to do because I'm like, you know, he might take him seriously. He might wind up doing this. So maybe in 40 years, he'll be a firefighter, Superman, ambulance operator. It's been a wild journey.
Well, indeed. Well, we will be all watching and And I know we'll be hearing from you as stuff starts coming in, and we count on hearing good reports of the Parker Solar Probe doing what you sent it to do. Justin Casper, U of M Climate Space Science Professor and lead investigator for NASA's Parker Solar Probe, thank you for sharing your passion
with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.